Here now is Stephen Wilson. Good morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Kind of going back through your background, you've driven a lot of different styles of race car. Obviously, with your four times as a starter at the Indy 500, qualified for a fifth. We'll get to that later on in the show. But what kind of gave you the racing bug when you were little?
Yeah, I mean, my passion for racing and motorsport really started at a young age. You know, when I was 9 years old, that's when I got my first go-kart and started racing. But before then, even watching racing on TV with my dad, and I was also fortunate, my older brother Justin, he was racing as well. So I really kind of grew up around the racetrack following him, and just knew that this is something I wanted to do from a very early age. And you know, just kind of always pursued it, and just never really gave anything else a second thought. You know, this was just something I wanted to kind of build my life around.
When you started out racing as a youngster, what was your goal? What did you want to get to? Did you ever think you'd end up here in Indianapolis as a driver in the Indy 500?
You know, when I first started at 9 years old, you know, watching Formula One on TV, and I didn't really know IndyCar existed. You know, I was based in England at the time, so, you know, it wasn't as big over there. And it's only as I got a little older and we would start watching, IndyCar in the mid-90s got super popular worldwide, and particularly the Indy 500. And so watching on TV there with my dad and with my brother, and that became a dream at that point then, to sort of make it to the highest level of sport that I could. And, you know, like I said, I've always dreamt of wanting to race in Formula One. And, you know, when Justin achieved that goal, and then he came over to the States to race in Champ Car and IndyCar, you know, that was, for me, kind of a pivot in my ambitions as a driver, because I kind of always wanted to race against my brother at the highest level. And, you know, that meant, he was racing in IndyCar at the time. That's where I wanted to be. So, yeah, that became the goal, and the ambition at that point was to reach IndyCar and reach racing in the Indianapolis 500 against my brother. And unfortunately, I was 1 year, you know, too late, and didn't get to achieve that goal of racing against Justin in the Indy 500. But he passed away in 2015, and I got my first start in the 500 in 2016. So, you know, I'm very honored and pretty blessed to have had the opportunities I've had racing in the Indy 500. It's the biggest race in the world, and all I want to do is race in that race and try to win it one day.
Well, and you've mentioned your brother Justin, and I was going to ask about him. This might be a good time to bring him up. I have an older brother. He's 13 years older than me, so I can kind of relate to having an older brother that you look up to. But my older brother didn't race really fast race cars, so you know, my brother, I kind of looked up to him as a golfer. So we were a little bit slower on the golf carts, I must say. But when you talk about your brother, and you can really hear it in your voice how much you looked up to him, tell us about Justin and what kind of guy he was.
Yeah, I mean, outside of just an amazing race car driver and, you know, he was an amazing father to two beautiful daughters, and also just a great brother as well. You know, he was such a great role model for me because, you know, he's 11 years older than me, and just the way he carried himself, how humble he was, and how he gave time to everyone, no matter who they were. You know, it was just, he was always trying to give back to other people, and I think that's something that I really admired about him. And, you know, I mean, he's a good role model for reach the highest levels of the sport, be an amazing driver and fierce competitor on track, but then also be kind and humble off the track. And I think that's a good quality and that a role model should have.
We're talking to Stephan Wilson here on Voices of the West Side on Indy's Giant 90.9. And after his passing at Pocono in 2015, I know that one of your big issues that you've pushed since his passing is organ donation. I wanted just to give you an opportunity to talk about that a little bit, if you wanted to go into that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize it at the time when he passed, but Justin had signed up to be an organ donor. And when he passed, his decision to say yes to being an organ donor helped save 5 lives. So that was just, you know, kind of his final act that kind of started the legacy, and through trying to create advocacy for, through my advocacy and of his decision and advocacy for organ donation in general, like, we've helped to sign more people up to say yes and being an organ donor. And I mean, that's helped save even more lives as a result. Over the last few years, you know, typically there's about 120,000 people on the national wait list, and you know, it's never a better time to change that if you're not already an organ donor, to change that decision and mark it on your drive list.
Absolutely, and it's marked on mine. So you know, I don't know what they'll want from me if something ever happens, but maybe something that I have could help out someone in the future as well. Stephan Wilson, once again, joining us here on Voices of the West Side. And you've started the Indy 500 4 times. That must just be an amazing feat to just start the 500, let alone race and nearly win it like you did in 2018. But kind of going back to being on that grid on race day as 33 drivers get the opportunity to do, what is that like? Can you even describe it and put it into words for people what that's like, just to be there and just be, know that you're not only a fan, which I've been a fan at the event before and I've been a worker at the event, but that you are actually one of the stars of the event, because you're going to be hopping in one of those airplanes that go around that place so fast. So what's that like, just to be there on race day?
Yeah, I mean, it's a culmination of a lot of time and work and effort that you've put in all year. You know, a lot of people, they tune in to the Indy 500 one day a year, but for a lot of the drivers that are not full-time in the series like myself, you know, we're working around the clock, around the, you know, throughout the whole year to make it possible to be there on race day. And, you know, some years it works out and you're there, and some years it doesn't, you know, and this year it didn't, but I've been fortunate to do it 4 times, qualified for a 5th one, which I didn't get to race in, but, you know, that feeling on race day morning, it's a combination of it feeling like Christmas morning and also like you're about to step into a ring with a bull and fight it, you know, because there's a lot of anticipation for what lies ahead. You're going to go 500 miles, you know, at speeds of 230 miles an hour. And there's just a lot of unexpected things that can happen. And, you know, there's a lot of risk involved too. So I'm fully aware of that going into it, obviously with my past history. So, you know, it can be a bit nerve-wracking on that morning, but, you know, then you strap in, you put your helmet on, and suddenly you get your game face on, and it's time to go.
Well, you know, you kind of mentioned it there, and it takes such courage to get out there and to drive those cars the way that you do. And how do you just focus in on hitting the marks every lap? I know that your mind, I mean, in anything, You know, if I'm sitting here teaching all day, my mind wanders. But when you're in the race car, how do you just stay hyper focused in for 500 miles, 800 turns around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway?
You know, it sounds hard, but it's just, you know, something that I've gotten more, you know, you kind of grow up doing this. I mean, I started racing when I was 9 years old, and, you know, it just, it's become sort of second nature, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. your subconscious really kicks in, and for me, that's what I love about racing, is that there is no time to think or lose focus, you know, because the stakes are so high that it kind of really forces you to focus in on being in the moment. And that's for me one of the best things that I love, or the biggest things I love about racing in general, is just that it forces you to be in that moment and not be thinking about what's going to happen in the future and what's happened in the past. There's just no room for that stuff. And just the years of experience that I've had in other racing disciplines and racing in the 500, and just the experience I've gained throughout my career has just helped me refine that. So you're just ultra focused, and all you're really thinking about is how to pass the guy ahead of you until, you know, you've got clear air ahead, clear road ahead of you, and clear air ahead of you. So that happened in 2018, and I took the lead on like 193 and led four laps, and leading the race for the Indy, well, leading the Indy 500, I'd say, at the very end of the race. It just is a magical feeling, and it wasn't to be that day to finish off that quest to win the Indy 500, but it gave me that taste of what that could be like, and it felt really good. So you know, I'd really like to get back to that someday, and you know, unfortunately it's not gonna be this year, but I'm you know, already working on trying to be back here at the race next year, and to get that taste of clean road ahead and being in the lead.
Well, I know that next year obviously will be the last year for the DW12 race car, so there's some possibilities that maybe there will be maybe some more slots for drivers next year.
Yeah, I mean, the environment in IndyCar and the landscape has just been really challenging the last few years. I mean, there's so many full-time entries, mm-hmm. that those years of having sort of 10 extra guys come into the Indy 500, and there's 10 opportunities kind of opening up for guys like myself that are full time, there's just been less and less of those entries. So, you know, you've seen a lot of guys like myself, J.R. Hildebrand, that are those regulars that would come in for the month of May that just haven't had the opportunity the last few years. So, you know, we're always trying, and, you know, just because there's only 53 there on race day and only 33 qualifying this year, it doesn't mean that there's only 33 guys that are trying to be there. There's probably 40 guys, and if there was 40 entries, there were 40 entries and 40 engines available, then you'd see the bumping come back. But I'm hoping that, like you said, with the change in the car coming, you know, change in the chassis coming for 2028, that in 2027 there's a bit more availability to put cars together and create those opportunities for guys like myself that can come in and compete and, you know, qualify for the race.
Well, and it's not like, you know, the days when I started watching IndyCar in the 80s where you had, you know, Lolas that were not only in Marches and Penske's that were not only from this year but maybe years past, and then somebody could develop their own chassis and bring their own engine, like the Menard Buick program and things like that. And it's not like that now, in that, you know, you have a certain number of DW12s that are speedway cars, and those cars are not used any really correct me if I'm wrong, an Indianapolis 500 car isn't necessarily used anywhere else on the circuit now, correct?
Yeah, and in an ideal world, your car is, or the car that you're running on the 500 is specific to Indy, and they love on that car and massage it all year round. because, you know, you were kind of getting to the point there, but it's like the competitiveness of the series now is so high that all 33 cars, you know, are going to be separated by, you know, just a couple of miles an hour, you know, in qualifying. So if that, you know, so, you know, back in 2023, when I last qualified, I qualified at 231.6 miles per hour. And that sounds like a really good number. And, you know, 231.9 was the difference between qualifying 25th and qualifying 16th, you know? So 0.3 of a mile an hour was almost 10 places on the grid. And that's kind of what you're dealing with now, is that the level, the competitiveness of the series is so high that the expense and the cost to refine it and get those last 10 of a mile an hour out of the race car has really reached a premium. And, you know, it's there's no room for guys to really show up with a car that's not been prepared fully for, you know, year round, to ready to run the 500, because it's just going to be uncompetitive. So, you know, it's just kind of nature of where the series is. And at the same time, while it's taken away from the opportunities and have bumping, the competitiveness at the front of the field, you know, you're going to see on race day, you know, the top 10 guys on the grid are going to have a shot to win the race, you know. So ultra competitive field, probably the closest field in history in qualifying. Even though there's no bumping in qualifying, the excitement for the race and for the fans is still at an all-time high, you know, all throughout the month.
Stephan Wilson joining us here on Voices of the West Side this morning, and I know we're kind of getting towards the end of our allotted time here with you, but we've kind of talked about it a couple of times and not really gone into it, but in 2023, you qualified for the Indianapolis 500. You're in the last practice session on that Monday after qualifying, I guess the last one before carb day. It was after carb day, correct?
It was the Monday practice. So it was the practice session following qualifying. Okay.
Yeah, so it was the Monday before carb day session. And through no fault of your own, you're into the wall. You can't race. You break a vertebrae in your back, and you're out for the 500. And Graham Rahal, who had gotten bumped, steps into your car runs that car in the 500. But for you, how difficult was that? Because not only are you hurt, but you've had that disappointment of being preparing the whole year to get to that point, and then being actually qualified to race, and then it's all gone. How do you deal with that kind of disappointment?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty painful, both physically and mentally, you know, because as you said, I mean, you spend an entire year preparing for this, getting sponsors excited and involved and engaged, working out the opportunity with the team, you know, working on your fitness for months and months in advance to be ready to run this race. And all that work was literally gone in an instant, you know, just taken away. If it was something that I did wrong or I made a mistake, then maybe it's also pretty hard to take. But when it was through an error from someone else on track, it really was a bit of pill to swallow. So, you know, at the same time, it was, I had the support of my family around me, and was able to focus on the fact that it wasn't, it could have been a lot worse. The injury itself, albeit I broke my back and needed surgery to fix it, it wasn't going to stop me from, you know, to race again. And, you know, it was the vertebrae chips, and, you know, it was pretty serious, but it wasn't going to affect my, you know, fortunately I wasn't paralyzed. So that was the, you know, the silver lining of it all. And that's something that I try to focus on as positives, and just, it kind of fueled me to have the determination to make it back and race the 500 again, because I just really didn't want my career at the Indy 500 to end the way it did in the by hitting the wall in turn one through no fault of my own. So, you know, it was an unfortunate, you know, situation, and unfortunate to be a part of that, but that's the risk that are involved for the Indianapolis 500. And, you know, when you're doing 220 miles an hour, those things can happen. But, you know, and I signed up for it. I accept those risks. And, you know, I'm just hoping that, you know, whether it's next year, I'm hoping next year we can get back. You know, I was so close to putting a deal together this year. I think I was probably the 34th entry if it was going to be one, but there wasn't a 34th entry, unfortunately. There's only 33, and, you know, I'm just hoping that the hard work that I've been putting in the last couple of years to try and make it back is finally going to get paid off, and I get my opportunity to come back to the Speedway and race this race again following that injury and that setback.
You talked about being potentially the 34th entry for this year's race. What was the biggest holdup? Was it maybe engine? Was it something else?
Yeah, I mean, the environment in IndyCar right now is, you know, you've got two engine manufacturers, and they both want to supply an even split of the field. You know, Chevrolet is supplying, you know, 17 engines, no, 18 engines, and Honda was playing 15. You know, we were in talks with, you know, one of the teams that's a Honda manufactured, or has Honda as a manufacturer, and, you know, it was close to happening, but it didn't work out. So, you know, then on the flip side of that, there was a chance to be in that 18 Chevrolet, and that, again, didn't work out either. So, you know, I had the sponsorship, you know, put together. It was a really good budget, and unfortunately, kind of time is also quite important currency, and as things came together, the timing was a little off, where it was going to be much harder to put the deal together and be prepared. And the team, they don't want to take that sort of gamble, you know, with how much is on the line already, and they're already a 3 or 4 car team. If it's not done early enough, then, and they feel like it's going to detract from their full-time entries, there's just too much value placed in those full-time entries that, sponsor obligations and through, you know, performance clauses, etc., that to add an entry, sort of, I would say it was last minute, but, you know, once the calendar flips from 25 to 26, that it suddenly becomes much, much more difficult, just the timing to put it together. I know that sounds silly because it's months in advance, but still, those teams are running full-time anyway, so they've already started their season, the testing, and racing in St. Pete, and racing at Barber, you know, Arlington. So suddenly that calendar speeds up, and it becomes much more condensed. And the desire from a team standpoint, like I said, once you factor in the risks that it and the possible side effects, a affecting your full-time entries. You know, it's just a lot less desire to put a deal together to run an extra car. So that's kind of the, you know, in a nutshell, kind of what I was facing. It's just, you know, from this standpoint today, is there's a lot of sponsor interest in the Indy 500. I think from that standpoint, the series is and the race is super healthy. You know, but you're also having to, you know, the factor in that the full-time entries are so important these days that whatever a team does to add an entry at Indy, it just cannot compromise the full-time program, you know. So, yeah, long-winded answer, but hopefully that gives you a bit of insight into, you know, kind of the challenges that we face as drivers trying to put together a program.
In other words, we don't just open up a garage bay and put a car in there. I mean, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. A lot of politics too that I probably can't get into. But that's Indy, and you know, it's a challenge just to be there, and that's what makes it so rewarding on race day when you walk out and you're one of those 33 entries. That also makes it, you know, why it's such an honor, you know, to be one of those starters, you know, because there's only 33.
Well, my last question for you, what keeps you busy other than your quest to make the 500?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much, you know, I'd say full-time is working on trying to put together the 500 full, you know, all year round. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. So kind of like an entrepreneur in that sense, mm-hmm. that, you know, it bears fruit, sometimes it doesn't. But then outside of that, sort of, I would say my day job is I'm coaching in various series, you know, in the United States. So series like Ferrari Challenge and other GT categories where, you know, drivers are, you know, fairly new to the sport and wanting to develop their skills, and I'm able to, you know, drive the cars with them to show them how to achieve the, you know, the lap time, and then at the same time being on the headset and being able to watch their live telemetry and give them feedback to improve their skills. So that's sort of like my day job, a little different than most day jobs, but you know, my true passion and what I'm focused on sort of day in, day out is trying to get back to the Indy 500.
Well, I certainly appreciate you taking the time and, you know, spending some time with us here as you drive and get set to maybe be here again next year. We know that if you are, I will be rooting for you.
I appreciate that. No, thank you very much for having me on. And yeah, we'll have to do this again next year. And hopefully the circumstances are different.
Let's make it a tradition, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. Stephen Wilson joining us on Voices of the West Side.